Thanks, all of you, for coming. And I want to particularly welcome Larry Smith from Huron, Ohio, who publishes with Bottom Dog Press. I have a couple of copies of my book over here, Breathing the West, Great Basin Poems. And because of that book, I got to know Larry reasonably well, I think. And I'm going to read poems from this book. Primarily, they're about my family, my father Lincoln Ellison and my mother, and growing up in the Wasatch Mountains of South Central Utah, which was a remarkable place to grow up. But I want to start with a poem that I have absolutely no idea if it's finished or any good, but it's just brought on by the events of the moment. It's called News of Almost Any Day, June 20th, 2016. Another shooting. So what else is new? It's practically the definition of any day, any day's news. Some guy with a kind of gun that isn't the flintlock of the Second Amendment's description of a well-regulated militia out to have his temper tantrum of bullets, to go after his wife or kids or people he doesn't like, gays, blacks, whoever happens to be in the front of the barrel of the weapon he fires. I think we're all shaken by the events of the last couple days. Some of the poems I'm going to read tonight are mostly about family and growing up in the Wasatch. And this one is in memory of my grandmother, a Cornish woman, Alrina Beatrice Thomas Ellison, and it's called Knitting Needle. And the person named A.O. was her husband. A.O. walked out. Alrina and the children lived in the chicken house, sold eggs and fruit. She baked Cornish pasties. The children sold them from the wagon they collected laundry in and took back, washed and ironed. She sold corsets, Avon products, door to door. At the birth of each grandchild, put $100 in a bank account, gave us a set of Encyclopedia Britannica. For high school graduation, sent us each a Webster's Dictionary. She mended, darned, crocheted a lacy shawl for me, braided a thick wool rug from our outgrown winter coats, said she'd performed abortions on herself with a knitting needle. No details. By then she must have known her husband feckless, but how did she know to guide the long, thin steel up, out of sight, inside her blood-drenched folds? This one is about my father, who was a great journal keeper. He was a scientist, and he kept journals from the time he was a teenager on. So this is first journals. Man of the house at 15, when his father walked out, Lincoln worked in the garden, pruned fruit trees, berry canes, cleaned the garage, kept two jalopies running, tended a nearby farmer's smudge pots, recorded what he saw, spiders, owl scat, a lifelong habit the natural world could not abandon him. Later, loss of soil was tragedy. Like warfare, it threatened civilization. Reading his journals was like the grown-up conversations we had walking home from the library where I worked for money to go to college. Don't worry about grades, he said. Just learn. This poem has some things I need to do a little glossary for. Spokane is in Washington, as you may know. Missoula, where I was born, is in Montana. Priest River is in Idaho. The CCC was the Civilian Conservation Corps. It was an organization during the Depression. And Vega is one of the constellations in the night sky that my parents regarded as singularly theirs. So there are references to all these things in this poem. Waiting. Young and poor, Lincoln wrote in his journal that by 1933, when he'd be 25, he expected he'd have gone on at least 2 scientific expeditions to foreign countries, be recognized as a leader of my field. Not until then, he wrote, is it time to talk of getting married? But in 1933, the Great Depression altered everything. Refugees from prairie states, land denuded of soil by wind, destructive farming practices, headed south and west, jobs were scarce. In Europe, the Reichstag fire, first concentration camp. Nothing was as he expected. Nevertheless, Lincoln asked Laurel to marry him. Next day, an offer of work in Idaho, Priest River Station, report immediately. They married in a hurry under a rose-trimmed arch on a dewy evening, the bride in a skin of ruffled satin. The two virgins had just one night together. He caught the train next morning for Spokane, Missoula, Priest River, wrote her he knew genuine content for the first time in his life. Then news that he might have to supervise a crew of CCC or ECW men in the wilds. April ended, May, then June. Sometimes Forest Service money ran out, plans changed again, but he always had work. Back in her little town, Laurel wrote, everyone looked askance. Why had her bridegroom done a bunk? They waited through July, through August. The Forest Service, he wrote, is not going to keep us apart. He had saved up money. Why not put in the winter in the North Woods? $200 will grubstake a pretty long winter. There would be time for reading and writing, many a ski and snowshoe journey, many a long evening of talks and lovemaking and music. Hi-ya! Laurel was packed, ready to join him. Then once again, the Forest Service was out of money. He'd work for the Park Service in Glacier Park, mapping timber types, women not allowed. He wrote, come, dear, let us find Vega every night, each of us. It will be our own particular kind of prayer. Snow fell in September. In November, finally, the letters stop. They're what I have to go on. They'd been married 7 months before they, who would in 5 years be my parents, first lived together. These were the rules I grew up with. Rules. You can tell a lady by her cuticles, mother, the preacher's daughter, said, and whether she crosses her legs and ankles. Her mother, the preacher's wife, decreed a piano's legs were limbs, a bull was a gentleman cow, and I should not sew marionette costumes on the Sabbath. Shoes should never be down at heel, nor seams of stockings crooked. Never wear blue with green, nor red with pink, nor plaid with stripes, nor silver with gold. White shoes between Easter and Labor Day, neither before nor after. Above all, never, never, never let a boy know how smart you are. Those were quotations. And this one is the title poem of the book. It's called Breathing the West. I was born in Montana, grew up in Utah, so I grew up breathing the West. Breathing the West. First gasps, provisional, Missoula winter air. I filled my lungs high in the Wasatch Mountains. learned mountain weathers above timber, tingle of aspen leaves, then left for Grinnell, Boston, Kathmandu, Pittsburgh. Hardly noticed how it was to breathe those different airs. But when I went back one summer to Snow Basin, knew my DNA's from here, the back slopes of Mount Ogden, the air that taught me how to breathe. And I want to finish with a poem from this book that Garrison Keillor read on his program. So I have a particular affection for this poem. My husband and I moved to an apartment in the fall, and we left our house to our daughter and her family. So this describes the backyard that used to be ours, but is now theirs. Tree. Today they are cutting down the old maple in the backyard. A crew of three men, one on a machine with long neck that raises him into high branches, one who has dismantled a part of the fence that hugs the tree, one wearing spikes, his chainsaw and other tools hooked to his belt, high up, cutting thick branches among dense leaves, working back toward the scarred and damaged trunk. The old maple has blushed faint green in spring, glowed gold in fall, spun lace in winter, runway and airport for squirrels, birds, an owl one year, a pair of woodpeckers who nested, laid eggs, a starling killed the chicks. But it's older than we are old and might come crashing down. It's being dismantled the way age dismantles, higher branches cut first, then pruned back until we can see from the sliced raw trunk 12 feet around an account of age. At dinner time, three squirrels, tentative, peer over the fresh stump, perplexed that their whole world has vanished. Thank you.